On episode 402 of the 40 Plus Fitness podcast, we meet Rajshree Patel and discuss her book, The Power of Vital Force. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/402. Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness? The 40 Plus Fitness podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go. There's still time for you to get your vote in for the Wellness Roadmap for the Author Academy Award. We made the finals, and there's a few weeks left for you to get your vote in, but I'd prefer if you went and did it right now. You can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/finalist. That's going to take you to the Author Academy Awards voting page. From there, you're going to go to the health category, which is on page 7. And just click on the cover. They're not going to record any information from you. They just want to record your vote. I'm not sure exactly how the scoring goes, but they are looking at fan participation, fan votes, as a way of picking the winner for the Author Academy Award. So it really would be an honor. I'd really appreciate if you do this for me. Go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/finalist and vote today. Thank you. Our guest today is a mind and meditation expert and an international self-awareness coach, trainer, and speaker. Over the last 30 years, she has taught hundreds of thousands of people in more than 35 countries the power of meditation, mindfulness, breathwork, and other ancient tools for assessing the innate sources of energy, creativity, and fulfillment within. Today, we're going to talk about her book, The Power of Vital Force. With no further ado, here's Rajshree Patel. Rajshree, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you, Alan. Happy to be here with you.
You know, I was traveling back from the United States. I'd gone back to do a few things, work on my education as a personal trainer, and then try to get my house a little bit further shaped up so someone will actually buy it from me. And so it's been go, 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 go. And then I had to drive because I was trying to save a little bit of money on Fly Spirit, drive from Pensacola down to Fort Lauderdale. It's a 9.5-hour drive. I do that drive, and then I get on an airplane. I fly overnight. I arrive into Panama City at 1:30 in the morning, get to my hotel, go to sleep, wake up early because it's just normal wake-up time, go ahead and do what work I can, get to the airport, fly over to Bocas. And I got here last night, and I was just like, I'm just drained. All of this is out of me. And I think we use that word a lot, drained,
Yes, we do.
And I think, when you really kind of start putting that together and you say, well, okay, why is my back starting to hurt? Why is my posture suffering? Why is my head kind of hurting? And it's that draining. It is really, we use that in the Western vernacular of force, of energy. But we don't really break that down to think of it in terms of all the other aspects of our health and wellness.
No, I don't think we do. To your point, I was going through a similar thing at some point before I got exposed to what we're going to talk about a little bit, this idea of a force or energy. I was a lawyer in LA doing all the stuff that anybody has to do, going to court, managing my files, family, friends. I had just moved from New York to LA, so I was isolated, doing my own thing on my own and trying to find, a place to sort of fit in, connect. So emotionally, there were things going on. There was a lot of stress going on mentally in terms of a brand new job. It was actually my first job as an attorney and a new city and so on. I was somehow getting through things. I knew I was tired. Obviously, I was waking up in the morning, not bouncing out of bed and dragging myself and kind of wishing, what the heck happened? How did this night go by so fast? And to your point, I hadn't really connected the dots that when I say I'm drained or I'm wiped out or I'm exhausted, I was really talking about not being charged or fueled enough. And your basic food or gym, if I happened to have done it that day or that week, just wasn't getting me through the day until by chance in 1989, I discovered this whole notion of vital force and how really we have to fuel all the levels, you know, of our life in order to do what we have to and then some, the things we want to do.
Yeah. You know, as I was kind of looking at myself and trying to, you know, kind of build a better me, because I knew I had kind of same thing. I went the public accounting route and then into internal audit and worked my way up C-suite and all of that. And when they finally let me go, it was kind of like this gush of pressure of everything. It was like, oh. And when I took some time to kind of sit back, that's when it, you know, just kind of really dawned on me that I had never really gotten completely there, because I had not really ever paid enough attention to the things that were going to bring me what I needed. And so, like, I define fitness as being the healthiest, fittest, happiest person you can be. And even though I was doing things in my life that brought me some happiness and some joy, I really wasn't getting all the way there all the time. And there was too many things pulling me back into the abyss. Now, in the book, you talk about the three main pathways to happiness. Could you take a few minutes to talk about those? Because I think this is critical if we're really going to get to wellness, that we address this first. You know, happiness, I actually did them in reverse order. I should have dealt with the happiness first and then started with the fitness and the health, because I think it would have been a lot easier.
Sure. I mean, so I think everybody knows, you know, what it means to be happy at whatever level, but we never really break it down. There's this sense of happiness that we get. Just, it's a quick thing, a momentary thing. Like, you show up to play, watch soccer, and you enjoy it. You want something, you get it, and you enjoy it, and you're happy about it. But the moment it's over, it's over. And that has its own impact in terms of how it wipes us out. Because if it's just that level, what I find is I need more and more of it. You know, I entertain myself with one thing, and then the next weekend I want a little bit more. So
yeah, I get depressed when football season ends.
Yeah, because it's over. Like, you need the next thing. And even in football, you notice you want, like, the next game, the match has to be a certain way, and who's really, you know, with each other, which player against what player, what coach with what team. So we want a little more of it. But then there's this other layer of happiness where you don't just watch. It's not momentary. A metaphor would be you actually go and play soccer. So you engage, you participate, and that brings another level of joy or happiness. It stays with us longer. It has camaraderie, team, more meaning, more engagement, you know, a sense of, oh, wow, I did something. Because we kind of tap into some part of ourselves that we hadn't really expected. Perhaps we played well or something.
To me, I actually do that now through tailgating. Obviously, the college football team's not going to let me on the field. So I go to a tailgate beforehand and hang out with my friends and have conversations and all that. So that's where that engagement comes in for me.
Exactly. And it stays with you in a very different way, because even when you go home, you're talking about the game and what you saw, but somehow that sense of belonging in a way is part of the whole picture. And then beyond that is this notion of coaching the game of soccer, you know, really getting involved in another level yet that's even more meaningful, more lasting, where you contribute to somebody else's life as much as you contribute to your own joy. And I think that joy, that kind of happiness, gives us, in my opinion, the resilience to get through a difficult time. It kind of boosts us from the inside out. It gives us a lot of energy. And then we deal with the ups or the downs that are coming, you know, in the day.
And I think that's why I'm so much more enjoy being a personal trainer and a coach than I did being an internal auditor. I'd go off for my weekend, you know, and I would go to a college football game and I would engage with my friends. So I had the pleasure of being at the game. I had the pleasure of just the game time experience and then the time with my friends. And then, yeah, there's the Facebook message group where we're all going to, you know, be either really happy about the game or be really upset about the game, or either side, and everybody's kind of arguing. And even that, I like just kind of sitting back and watching all that. But then I kind of go to work and it's audit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But there's another level to all this, which most people don't really connect the dots to. And that is, like, when we feel our best, when we feel like we have the most amount of life energy, and doesn't matter what's going on outside, we feel really charged up. Like you come back from vacation, you know, everything's still the same. You come home and all the things you have to do are still there, but somehow your outlook Monday is much more optimistic, much more positive, and you're ready to jump into the day knowing that it's going to be a lot of work because you are out for a week or 10 days. And that kind of happiness is what I would call more innate. And it's directly what I've discovered is related to how rested your mind is, how much energy you really have. And I don't mean the caloric energy, you know, the food and the sort of your daily maybe green juice that somebody might do, or coffee or sugar. I'm really talking about this thing called vital force, which you're sort of born with. Like if you look at kids, you know, they're not playing soccer and they're not watching and they're not hanging out, but there's a lot of joy and strength and stamina. And that's really what we're talking about when I say vital force.
Yes. Now, you got into a part in the book, and as I went through it, I think I had to read it twice to kind of really walk myself down the line of, you know, the past, the present, and the future, and how so many of us kind of get stuck in this loop that prevents us from really kind of experiencing the joy the way that we could because of the things in the past that, you know, and the things we think are going to be in the future. Can you kind of talk through that line? Because it's not a straight line like you would think. Like we had our past, it's over. We have our presence, it's now. And then the future's there. But we don't live that way.
No, we don't actually. So obviously, depending on the event and how intense it was, you know, somewhere we store it in our system. Our brain, our body, our mind, our cells hold on to pleasant or unpleasant events and situations, you know, and we clearly know that if I bring up an unpleasant thing, depending on to what degree you've let go of it, you're going to have a reaction in this moment. And if we look, when we're holding on to things, it brings with it a certain spectrum of emotions, and we don't really realize it, but impatience, agitation, frustration, anger, regret, guilt, blame, these emotions, which are clearly not serving us, they're negative, that's what takes away our happiness, are related to something that's already happened, it's done and gone. And if I ask someone, can you be angry about something that hasn't yet happened? Our general tendency is to say, yes, of course. But really, if we examine, it's not possible. If it's about something that hasn't happened, we're going to be afraid. We're going to be worried. We're going to be anxious. We're going to have doubts, insecurity. That's about something that may or may not happen. And I often like to use this analogy of a computer. See, a lot of times we're working on a file, and in the background, we have a lot of files open because we worked on something a week ago, 10 days ago, a month ago. And we kind of forget about it, but those files are still open in the background. They're doing something to our hard drive, our brain, in the computer, the hard drive. And what it's doing is everything from slowing it down, creating glitches, draining energy, taking the life away from the file, the moment that's in front of us. And a lot of times, you know, Alan, if you go to search something on a computer, you anticipate based on history. The computer anticipates based on your prior search and opens more options. And I think that's really what's going on in our life. Our mind, our brain, our body is filled with stuff that happened yesterday, year ago, 10 years ago. And the moment we come in front of something this moment, it anticipates all of that. We start hitting on those emotions and we're not conscious of it. And similarly, the future, you know, I love to think that we have a future, but honestly, we're so hardwired. We're kind of conditioned by the time we're 10 years old with, through osmosis, taking all kinds of things on with our friends and family and parents and school system, that our future is really us being anxious about, oh my God, I hope what happened yesterday or last week or in my last job doesn't happen again. So it's really an anticipation of the past. And everybody talks about, oh, live in the present moment and all of that, but we've never really broken it down to what it's doing when we are in the past or when we are caught in the future.
Yeah, I was, as I was reading that, I was kind of thinking back to like the last 3 years when I was doing the internal audit stuff. And kind of the first year we came across like a downturn in the market, and we got into November and the talks about layoffs started happening. And then in December, there was a layoff. And so I was like, okay. And that's horrible. If you've ever experienced that, I can tell you it's just as hard from the manager's perspective as it is from the employee's perspective, because you're having these conversations that don't necessarily deserve to leave. And then what happens is I got into football season. And as we got closer and closer to November, which means, you know, September, October, when we're at prime of our football season, I just started getting this anxiety. As soon as football game was over and I'm driving back to home, back to go to work on Monday, my head's already into this funk. And so I didn't have that energy and that bounce to go back to work. I had this dread. And then, you know, we got into November and the conversation started again. And then in December, there was a layoff. And I can tell you kind of the final year I was there, that dread started in July. And, you know, I can't tell you how many wonderful things I did during that period of time that I couldn't be fully present for because of the anxiety I had for what my November and December were probably going to look like.
Right. Yeah.
Even though there were no conversations about headcount at that point in time, everything was positive at the company. You know, we're going to do this, we're going to grow that, we're going to, you know, we've done this. All that was there. All those conversations were positive at work. I just had this looming dread that something bad was going to happen in November, that I couldn't enjoy myself. Now, what I had a dread for actually did happen. so, you know, I'm not, you know, but there was nothing I could do to stop it from happening. It was out completely outside my control. And rather than kind of be rational about it and say, I can't stop this from happening, this is not my call, not my thing, all I can do is, but I missed, for the better part of 2 years, I missed a lot of joy because I just kept letting that cycle play out in my mind.
But you know what, to add to a little bit of what you're saying, it's true, you had no control over it. And, you know, you lost 2 years at whatever level with all the other beautiful things that may have been going on in front of your life. I also believe if we have so much attention on something, we invite it at some level. You know, if we really have a lot of attention on something being positive and uplifting and it's going to be great, then somehow I feel like the universe smiles back at us and we invite at least the positive vibe of the moment. And if we're really anxious and we're concerned, oh my God, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, just our vibe sometimes invites that. And so we lose on multiple levels. We're just not aware of it. The time now, the 2 years that you mentioned, and who knows, perhaps if the outlook could have been different, maybe a different kind of result could have happened. We just don't know, because life is so much more than just what we see, touch, and feel. And I think it's important to see that we can't change our future and we can't change our past, but nobody really, not at home or in school, has ever taught us how to get the heck out of there and say, okay, what's in front of me? And how do I reboot myself to look at this moment fresh and new?
Yeah. And I think that's where I struggled with it, is I kind of just put that all on my shoulders and carried it. And it just got heavier and heavier and heavier until it was lifted off my shoulders by the layoff. And then I was like, okay, now I have a wide open future and I can just figure out how to make this the best I can make it.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I'm in the middle of a sort of a big personal challenge at the moment. Yes, this book is coming out, but going through a lot of family things. And I see that my mind wants to lock into that, you know, and not the joy of whatever's going to happen as a result of this book. And I have to consciously bring myself back. I need to take a short pause to say, that's there. And your worst imagination doesn't mean that's what's going to happen. Let's see what you can do about it now and get busy and get active in trying to address it. So it is a matter of being conscious and inviting a pause into my life to say, what can I do about it, rather than how does it help me to sit here and worry?
Yeah. In the book, you put together an actual exercise where someone can go through and methodically put together these things and walk through the positive, negative, the emotion, the past, future, now. Can you kind of just briefly talk about how that exercise works?
Yeah, absolutely. And I really invite people to sort of take inventory. I do it for myself, you know, every 3 months or so. And what I'm asking myself to do is to say, okay, what's keeping me up at night? What is the thing that lives for me in my head? And I, you know, just make a list of it. And I always invite myself to make a list of 10 things that are going on. So like before I woke up, I saw my mind was running on, oh yeah, I have to connect with Alan, and how's it going to go, and where's it going to go? And it's just a recognition that's not something that's happening now. It's about the future. I'm concerned about my mom's health, so that would go on the list. You know, my niece going away to college and the struggles that she's having as she's leaving home for the first time. So I make a list about 10 things that are either keeping me awake, or I find myself talking about or thinking about, you know, or continuously somehow coming back to. And the moment I do that, first of all, I've put light on it. It's not going on unconsciously in the background, like those open files. And then the exercise asks the reader to look and see, is it generating a positive emotion, feeling, or experience, or a negative feeling or experience? So I'm planning my vacation, and that's positive. And at the same time, somebody could have in the background, yes, it's great, but oh my God, so much work is going to pile up. Or how am I actually going to end up paying for this because things are more expensive than I'd hoped for? So just asking the reader to put a plus sign or a negative sign next to it to realize how much of our mind, our time, our brain is caught up in positive or negative. And then to kind of label it. You know, there's a lot of talk on emotional intelligence, but we don't really know how to get cognizant of it. And if you look, not just positive or negative, but to say, wow, this is something that's already happened. It's about the past, and putting that down next to it. Or this isn't going on now. It may never happen. It's really about the future. It's a year away, 10 years away, or I don't even know if it's going to happen. Okay, it's about the future. And just making a list, taking an inventory about what is it, positive or negative. And then if you add it up to see out of 10, is 50% of your life or time positive or 50% negative? Or is it more, 60, 70, 80%? And the unfortunate thing is we as human beings are hardwired towards a negative bias, meaning if someone gives us 10 compliments and one insult, we really remember the insult more. It kind of sticks to us more. It's just how we're hardwired. So similarly, if we look at that list, I find that most people will discover that 80%, 8 out of 10 things are not working for them. It's not positive things. And they weren't cognizant of it. And the moment they notice it, they say, it's a sort of a rude wake-up call, you know, to do something about it and make a shift.
Yeah, I you know, I was kind of looking at things right now that just weren't positive in my life that I had some control over, you know, what I had control over and what I didn't. And I just started saying, you know, I've got all this negative on my Facebook feed for all this political stuff. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, and so I said, you know, they have this pause feature on Facebook. What if I just pause this person for the 30 days? What will that do? And I did that for, you know, probably about, I'd say about 6 or 7 people on my feed, and my feed got nicer. It got more positive. I started seeing, you know, positive affirmations. I started seeing joy in people's lives. I started seeing birthdays and all these things that were good. And so I kind of got a little addicted to pausing people. Sorry, friends, but all you're going to do is talk about politics and how terrible life is on earth. I need to take a break from you. And I did that. as a kind of an experiment about a month ago, and my feed just kind of really got nice, and I enjoyed the interaction with people. I enjoyed seeing positive things in their lives, you know, grandchildren and births and marriages. And there was some sad, you know, a friend of mine lost his wife and things like that. But all in all, I saw real life and not that. So, I think you're right with those 10 things. I realized one of my 10 things was this negative Facebook feed. And, you know, I rather than just walking away with it from it, because that's, you know, next to impossible, I just, well, what if I just tried this tweak to it? And it kind of gave me an opportunity to be more in the now with my friends and what's actually going on in their lives.
And you actually, you know, brought a lot of positivity to the other people who are in the feed, right? It's not just you. By that simple act of putting a pause for a few people, you uplifted and up-leveled you, your energy, your vibe, what's happening for you, and enjoying that. But at the same time, it brought more of that for other people. And it kind of becomes the conversation we spoke about earlier in terms of happiness. You know, it's going to the football game and having the barbecue outside first and engaging with it, and then driving home and going home and saying, okay, let's guys stop over and get a beer here and see what happens. So you, in a sense, became contagious. The happiness became contagious. And so I love that, you know, why not spread something more positive, and why not become more conscious about how do I want this to look for me in my life?
Absolutely. Now, I've always been a big fan, well, once I figured it out, a big fan of breath and breath work, you know, and the meditation, because that's what a lot of us in the Western world, as we start kind of getting into this whole, how do we deal with stress? How do we take care of ourselves? And it kind of always comes back to, well, you know, meditation, and that starts with breath work for most of us. As I got deeper into the thought about breath, you know, it kind of has the two things. One that you kind of bring up in the book, but the other is, the energy processes in our bodies require oxygen. So if we're, yes, we're not bringing in the breath, if we're just, you know, because when we're stressed, there's little short little breaths, and we're not really giving our body the energy, the force that it needs to be successful. But it does also give us this opportunity to be right here, right now.
Mm-hmm. And both are valuable, right? They're actually synonymous. If you have a lot of energy, that's what allows you to be right here and right now. And the more you are in the right here and the right now, the more energy you have. So it's a virtuous cycle. And to your point, like when we're under stress, if we are caught in the fear, worry, or anxiety, or the anger, or the regret, we notice that our breath gets shorter and shorter. The more stressed we are, the more we kind of hold on to our stomach muscles. In a way, we hold on to our breath, and we naturally tell people, come on, man, just breathe. Okay, just breathe, you know, because we notice that physiologically, the innate response to stress is to sort of shut everything down, what we call fear or freeze or flight, you know, and just that tiny awareness, oh my God, I'm getting stressed. Let me make my breath longer, does exactly what you said. Both those things. I notice if I elongate my breath, I calm down, but then I feel refreshed again. If nothing else, you're dumping out the CO2 that's just sitting in the lungs, which makes you tired. You know, in a closed room, you go to a doctor's office, or you're sitting on a flight. This happens to me all the time. As soon as they close that door, there's not enough fresh air in the flight, I start to get drowsy, groggy, and I crash until they actually open up the vent and allow fresh air to come in. I don't know if people know that they kind of don't let enough air in until they reach a cruising altitude. You know, everything is just the bare minimum. So fresh air has a lot to do with our perception, our outlook. It kind of gives us a fresh way to look at things. So more energy, more present, more energy.
Yeah, I still tell you they don't have enough fresh air on that airplane.
No, they don't.
And I don't want to touch anything. I don't want to breathe. I just, you know, I'd breathe really shallow on a plane because I just know I'm going to get sick. I'm just going to, I got to be positive about it. But at any rate, yeah, planes. Ugh. So, you know, I guess this was a disconnect I always had, because as you get into the concept of breathing, meditation, and mindfulness, that they in my head, it's always been one thing. But in the book, you kind of say, no, meditation and mindfulness are not actually the same thing.
No, at least not the way we understand mindfulness today in the Western world. You know, it's more of a noun rather than a state of mind. Mindfulness has become a name. And the way we practice it here is really using more mental stuff, more monitoring, more, you know, labeling, more attention to what's happening in the mind. And well, that's just really hard to do. If we could do it, we wouldn't need mindfulness in the first place. And unfortunately, or fortunately, of course, there's a lot of value to it. But 60 years ago, when it first came into the West, people went, you know, to the Far East and went into monasteries, spent some amount of time there, and they took a single thread of an entire system, which was to label and to monitor physical activity and what's going on in our head. And that had its value in that it gave us the ability to have more what I call frontal cortex, meaning greater rational, logical decision-making aspect to us. And it was really necessary in those days because times were different. But today, we're so hardwired with our computers and our cell phones, they're kind of like an extension of us. We're always on. So our thinking brain is always on. It's always processing. And so meditation, the way I'm using it, is really letting all of that mental brain stuff to settle down, to get quiet, to shut it off somehow or another. And you'll see, when I say we're always on, you see the sleeping industry is growing like crazy, meaning the pills and the pharmaceutical world, because what was once natural isn't happening anymore. We're not sleeping. I know so many, many people. Every course I do, students show up, and if I ask how many of you feel like you go to sleep and wake up more tired in the morning, 60% of the room will raise their hand. How many of you people feel like you had 8 hours in bed, but you're not sure, was I thinking all night or sleeping? 70, 80% of the room will raise their hand feeling like, yeah, I just feel like I'm processing or thinking all night. And that means we're keeping that thinking brain on. And so what we really need to do now is to click off. Not just close the file we're working on in front of us in this moment, but close the tabs in the back so we conserve energy, so that we give rest to the whole computer, you know, the hard drive. And so mindfulness is good for something specific, but meditation is a conscious pause, a willingness to let the mind drift, not hold on, not be aware, not lock it into something, allowing it to drift, let it be as it is. And that unwinding actually gives us deeper layers of rest when we go to sleep. We kind of connect better with people in front of us because we're really listening instead of our own stuff that's going on in our head that's constantly on, you know. It gives us more energy, of course, and so on, and makes us happier.
Yeah, that was one of the challenges that I had when I was, you know, kind of in my hyper-stress state. Of how do I actually get my brain to stop this stuff? You know, I'm drinking out of a fire hose every day. How do I actually, you know, shut it off? You know,
yeah.
And that made sleep very, very difficult. And so I worked on things. It started with breath work. It started with taking just short pauses during the day where I would sit down in a quiet office and say, okay, you know, I had the Headspace app on and I'm kind of going through this process of getting mindful, or at least, you know, being aware that all these thoughts were actually there all at the same time and that I was jumping from one to the other. So it was before I even got to play out one idea, one thought, one fear, one anxiety, I was on to the next one. So they were just constantly looping in my head, and I had never really figured out how to get somewhere else or somewhere else other than in those stress loops.
But what if we didn't even have to figure out or even notice those thoughts? What if we had kind of an on-off switch to all this thinking? You know, that's really what I'm kind of talking about. Let's go past that having to be aware. Because the truth is, look, if you see parents tell their kids at a dinner table or while they're studying, focus, you know, be here, be present, come on, stop thinking about all those other things and focus. If that kid turns around and says, okay, mom, okay, dad, how? They really wouldn't have an answer to that question. If you ask adults to sit still for a few minutes, it's not easy. If you ask them to close their eyes, they're like, no, I can't do that. 8 out of 10 adults will say to me, I don't know if I can sit that long. I don't know if I can sit still. I don't know if I can close my eyes. And so what I say is, okay, don't worry about it. Use the breath like an exercise. You don't have to close your eyes. You don't have to find, you know, all the paraphernalia of sit well and in a proper place, in a quiet place or anything. I just say 3 times a day, create a pause. Any way you have to breathe, I'm just asking you to breathe consciously as an exercise, not as something that you focus or have to pay attention to. And so first thing in the morning, as soon as you wake up, I tell people, just lay in bed, doesn't matter, or sit up and lean against your headboard and do 10 long breaths in and out. You're just consciously breathing. I don't care if your mind is focused or not focused, thinking or not thinking, and, you know, looping from one thought to another, just 10 long breaths in. It'll do exactly what you said earlier. Number one, it brings in more oxygen. We've been, you know, laying still. We haven't been active. Our lung and our breathing capacity has reduced. So number one, it brings in more oxygen. But number two, our out breath is an off switch to thinking. And a lot of times we wake up in the morning processing stuff that we were entering into sleep with. So 10 long breaths, first thing. Second thing is, I always say before lunch, if nothing else, you've ordered your food, maybe you're sitting down in your office cafeteria, just before you eat or as you're walking to the cafeteria, nobody knows you're doing it. You don't need to close your eyes. Do 10 long breaths in and out because your breathing, number one, energizes. It's going to bring in more oxygen. But number two, on the out breath, you're going to empty something from your head. You're going to lower the number of thoughts that are going on in your head. And that's going to change how you digest food, how fit and well you feel around what you eat. It's important that we absorb, we assimilate, we digest with a calm state of mind because we're not just our body. We are what we eat. And yes, we eat carbohydrates and protein and all of that. But if we're sitting there stressed out, you're kind of chewing that stuff back in. And in old traditions, you know, there was a time when we sat quietly to eat, not just because, oh, it was some ritual, but it did a lot. And today we know about gut health. We know about biome. We know that friendly bacteria thrive when we're not under stress. And when we're under stress, there's too much acid, so we don't thrive. So again, if not every meal, at least before lunch, 10 breaths, then go ahead and eat. And the most necessary, if you do it nowhere else, is before bed, because how you enter sleep is really going to determine the quality of sleep. I just know that I could be so wired with so many things. When I get into bed, I say, okay, a day in a life is over. I did the best I could. And then I start to take long breaths in and out. By the time I get to my 4th or 5th breath, I'm asleep. I'm out. And what I'm doing is shutting off the would have, could have, should have, you know, the yada yada files that go on. And if we enter sleep like that, our emotional brain, our unconscious, our subconscious is going to be processing that. That is a computer that's getting drained. And then we wake up feeling like somehow, I just feel like I got up on the wrong side of the bed, or I'm not so rested, and I wish I had more time. So just these 3 pauses, nobody needs to know you're doing it. It doesn't matter if you got your eyes closed or not. Honestly, if the listeners out there, you know, if they just do it, they'll say, wow, okay, this is something I'll not let go of. Anyway, I have to breathe. I'm going to do it consciously 3 times a day.
Yeah. Well, if they listened to last week's episode, when I had Amy Sarin on, Dr. Amy Sarin on, we actually talked about this specific thing with the parasympathetic nervous system mm-hmm. and the stress switch and everything there. So you're talking right up my aisle of, you know, we've got to turn this thing off. We've got to get our brain to think, okay, we're safe. We have no fight or flight to go on right now. We can go to sleep and actually get good rest.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think that, I mean, when unfortunately we've never taught that, like your breathing is connected between these two, right? The sympathetic stress response, as we say, fear, freeze, or flight, which was meant for emergencies in life. And it's connected to the parasympathetic, meaning the rest, the calm, the happy, the loving state, the easygoing state internally. Body can be dynamic, but internally calm. I mean, if you see any, you know, professional, any athlete, their mind has to be calm, but their body is in high gear, high performance mode. And your breathing is connected in such a way that if you elongate your breath, if you make it longer, you move from, oh my God, to I'm going to do it. Your mind naturally shifts in attitude. And so anybody can do it, the kid or the adult, you know, as busy as we might be, you do it while you're moving. In a board meeting, I often tell people, because by the time you leave an hour of a board meeting or any meeting for that matter, you just kind of sat there wiring yourself up with, oh my God, one more meeting. Why is this happening? Why do we need to listen to this? Oh, it's the same old stuff. All that's happening is we're getting wound up. And then you got to go sit at your desk and do all that work. And so I just say to them, just sit in the board meeting. Anyway, listening isn't going to get taken away because you're breathing. So do both those activities. Let the listening be there, but breathe a little bit long in and out. And you'll walk out of that meeting and say, okay, well, that's that. Let me get back to what I have to do.
Absolutely. I wish I'd had that advice 3 years ago. I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. What are three strategies and tactics to get and stay well?
So for me, again, I say, you know, no matter what, breath is your number one tactic to stay well. Physically, your body needs the oxygen. Mentally, it brings your mind in the present, in the here and now. To some degree, it lowers thoughts depending on how well and how long you breathe. Number two, I always invite people, and I do it every day. When I go to bed, I really tell myself, you know, sometimes out loud even, my hand sort of lands on my chest and I say, this day is over. It's like a life over. However it's been, tomorrow I invite new possibilities. I really consciously let the day go, even if it's in words and a concept only. That's the second thing that I will always do. And the third thing is, I invite people to say, no matter what, you're the driver behind your life. You gotta take 5 minutes a day, morning or evening, to just quiet down and reflect, to be grateful, to recognize that everything that we think isn't as bad as we think, that, you know, the universe is behind me. Just 5 minutes. Maybe as you enter your bed, maybe as you get up in the morning after the 10 breath, just to say, I'm going to make it a great day. It's a type of meditation. It's self-connection, self-awareness, saying, I matter because I'm the driver of my life. I have to take a break. 5 minutes.
Raji, great. Thank you for those. If someone wanted to connect with you, learn more about the book, where would you like for me to send them?
So certainly for the book, they could just go to Amazon, The Power of Vital Force. Actually, I don't know how to make this available to your readers, but if they just go to my website, rajshreepatel.com, and just put down, you know, that they came from your show, there is an online course with a lot of tools and tips available to people. It's 11 sessions. The last session is a live webinar. That could be, you know, a big bonus gift in terms of the book and how to use it. So The Power of Vital Force on Amazon or Barnes and Nobles, or RajshriPatel.com.
Great. Well, I'll definitely have links. So let's stay in connection. Thank you so much for that gift. You can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/402, and I'll make sure to have those links in the show notes. So Rajshri, thank you so much for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to share my morning with you.
Absolutely. I hope you enjoyed our conversation today with Rajshri. If you'd like to continue this conversation or talk about anything else health and fitness related, I'd like to invite you to join us at our Facebook group. You can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/group. It's a really supportive group of people, not overly, you know, bombastic of too many posts and whatnot, but just a nice group of people to hang out with, ask questions, have some support, have some accountability. I really enjoy interacting there. It's the best way for you to get in touch with me and interact with me. So I'm on there every day talking to folks. So that's the best place to go. If you want to be a part of my community, go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/group. Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet David Winston and discuss his book, Adaptogens. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.